Welcome to the ASP.NET seminar for CS50. So we're just going to cover the basics of ASP.NET, the difference between ASP.NET and PHP, and why you would want to use it as opposed to PHP or anything of that nature. So what we're going to cover, as it says here, is basic background, writing your first PHP, ASP.NET file, the idea of code behind files, and then some ASP.NET controls. This is where ASP really does shine, is the control feature. And then look at some a brief example of something called a master page. So let's get started with basic background. So what is ASP.NET? ASP.NET stands for Active Service Pages, and it uses the .NET framework. It's a server-side technology developed by Microsoft. So unlike PHP or something that's free to use, ASP.NET is developed by Microsoft, and usually it's a bit more expensive to develop on because the servers that run ASP.NET have to have special things running on them. However, a lot of large companies like to use ASP.NET or any sort of .NET technology because most of them run Windows, and it's really easy to integrate this sort of technology. So if you go out into the real world and actually do some programming of .NET of this nature, the .NET framework is actually very, very popular. ASP.NET by itself is a program that runs inside what is called IIS. IIS is the Internet Information Services, and it is the web server that comes with a Windows machine. So this is the same as, for example, Apache, which is what's running on cloud.cs50.net now, I believe, that basically gives you up, that serves the web sites. ASP.NET files are parsed by the .NET program, and then the HTML is returned to the browser. So this is very similar to PHP, where the PHP files are first parsed, and then the HTML is returned from the server. Just to make sure, ASP is not the same as ASP.NET. So ASP is sort of the old version. ASP.NET is completely rewritten based on the .NET framework, and it is actually much more powerful than ASP. At least I think it is. So quick differences. ASP is a scripting language like PHP, and so you have the messy spaghetti program, spaghetti coding problem. So the same sort of when you wrote your PHP files, right? When you wrote your PSET 7, when you had the table for your portfolio, you had a while loop that printed out bits and pieces of a table and then closing the while loop all inside scripts and whatnot. That's sort of messy, and that's sort of what ASP is, or sort of is like that. And ASP.NET gets around this whole issue and, for the most part, makes the coding different from the HTML. This is where ASP is great. And the way it does this, it's an object-oriented language, and it uses controls, which I'll get to in a bit. And these controls basically let you interact with the code that's being, the HTML code that's being generated in a coding way, so working with actual code as opposed to generating HTML and writing HTML snippets. The code is compiled, which is actually a great performance benefit. So what happens is the first time you visit the page, if it's the first time ever, the server will load the page, compile it, and then run whatever's on the page and return the HTML. If it's running for the second time, since the page is already compiled, it'll run much, much quicker. So this is actually one great feature of ASP.NET. It compiles the pages on the fly and then gives you that sort of speed improvement. It also includes event-driven programming. So this is sort of like PSET 8 when you used AJAX. We had events that were registered to your maps for Google. So, for example, if you moved the cursor or it zoomed in, zoomed out, an event was triggered. And this event then, for example, would call your get new news articles function. So ASP.NET is kind of based on those sort of principles. So just a very quick diagram of how this works. So you have a client, which is, for example, your browser, Internet Explorer, Firefox, Safari, whatever you're using. It sends a request, so give me default.aspx. That gets listened to by IIS, which is, again, the web service running or web server running on a Windows environment, which then passes that request on to ASP.NET, which is a program running inside IIS. And then that's compiled and run. And then that returns your HTML. So very similar to PHP in that sense, sort of same sort of workflow. Okay, what you will need to write ASP.NET websites is a Windows computer or any other machine that has Windows, like a Windows environment virtualized on it, the .NET framework, the .NET SDK, and Visual Studio. You don't need Visual Studio, but it makes things a lot easier. It's actually one of the great reasons why to use ASP.NET over other languages is coding in Visual Studios is just absolutely phenomenal. Okay, so writing your first ASP.NET page. All the code that you're going to see here is available on the site. You can download it as a zip file. It's a zip file of the project that you can just import into Visual Studios. And so that'll just load all the files and everything will work. Or if you don't want to use Visual Studios, all the actual files are in that folder as well. So you can just download them and do whatever you want with them. If I can go on, I can give you this URL later. So here's your first ASP.NET page. It looks pretty boring, doesn't it? This is plain old HTML. And just like your first PHP page, it's the same thing. The only thing you'll notice is that here, the extension is not .html, but it's .aspx. So that means it's an ASP.NET page. Okay? So it's very simple. If we actually look at some code, here's the code. This is what it looks like in Visual Studios. Okay? And just to run it, it'll hit this play button up here. And so what it says, it's building the directory, so it's running all the code. And then it should open up. Whoops, here we go. There you go, my first ASP.NET page. Plain and simple. It's just pretty much plain old, it is plain old HTML. Actually, it's XHTML, but with an ASPX file extension. Okay, back to the presentation. So that's that. Here we go. This one's a bit more interesting, not much more, but here we have your second page. And a couple things are different here. So the first thing you'll notice is up here you have this weird looking thing up here. That's one thing that's different. And another thing that's a little different is you have this part right here. Now, what is that? So this up here is called a directive. And what you're saying is that the language that I'm going to write my ASP.NET page in is in C#. Okay? So the thing that's nice about ASP.NET is you can write it in two languages, either C# or VB, Visual Basic. The syntax is different. So C# is much more like a combination of C++ and Java. And VB is, I can't really think of a good example. It's very different. Depends what you like. It's probably easier to learn C# since it's much more similar to what you've been doing so far. But you can, whatever you can do in VB, you can do in C#. Whatever you can do in C#, you can do in VB. So it really doesn't matter. And the MSDN documentation online provided by Microsoft has examples for both. So whichever one to choose, they're examples for both. So it doesn't matter. Okay. So here we're just saying that, look, this page, whatever code's on here, this page, is going to be in C#. And then the next thing you'll see is this little script thing, which, well, sort of similar to JavaScript in that sense where, hey, look, anything in between this is code, right? So you're saying, here's some code, and the code is going to be run on the server, right? So this is this run at tag right here, saying that whatever's on here, you run it on the server, right? You don't run it on the client side like with JavaScript where the code runs in your browser. This will run on the server. And so anything that's done by ASP.NET, you need to have this run at tag, so this run at server. You just have to tell it to be run at the server. But apart from that, it's pretty much exactly the same. And if you were to compile and run this just like I did with example one, the output would be exactly the same, since this part is exactly the same, minus the fact that this says second as opposed to first. And actually, I've got one more difference. There's this form right here. Right? So everything on an ASP.NET page that's going to be compiled and run has to be in a form. Okay? And again, this form is running at the server. Do you have any questions?
Yeah. So what happens with elements that aren't run at the server?
So elements that are not run at the server are just like these here. They just get sent right back.
Well, I mean, so head is run at server, right? So what's the difference semantically that you do run at server for head and don't?
Not much, because there's nothing is done in there. There's a slight difference. So using this run at server makes it an HTML control. I'll get to that in a very it's like a couple more slides, but it makes it an HTML control, which means you can actually do things with it on the server. So for example, I could modify the contents of head because it's running at the server while it's being compiled. I'll show you an example of how that works. That's sort of why you have that run at server. But does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Sort of?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to so the third page, it's a bit more involved, but not much. So here, I put in a function here, right? So instead of having just a blank script area, I said, well, let's make a function, right? So there's a function there called first function. And all it does is prints out my third ASP.NET, .NET page. So response.write is the same as echo or printf in PHP, okay? And to call this function, you call it right here. So these angle bracket percent is the same as the angle bracket question mark PHP in PHP. It just says, execute this code in here. And here what it does is it executes first function, and that does exactly what you'd expect it to do. So if we run this, so let's go over here. Example, hopefully this will work like this. Example 3. There you go. My third ASP.NET page, just like you'd expect. Okay? But at this time, this point, right, the my third ASP.NET is actually done on the server. It's actually written in to the HTML. That make sense? Okay. So you briefly saw these directives. So up here, this thing up here, this angle bracket percent ampersand, that's called a directive. And there's different types of directives. And this one's called a page directive. What you're saying is that here's some attributes or some properties about this page. And this page directive can only appear on an ASPX file. So it can only be included in an ASPX file. On another page, it'll give you an error. Okay? So there's a couple other ones. Here's the basic ones that you probably would use. There's like 6 or 7, and you can find them down here. This text here is copied directly from that page. But so that's the page. To define a control, which I'll get into in a bit, you just use ampersand control to import other files, same as when you had, for example, include in C, or require once, or import in PHP, similar sort of idea. And register allows you to register an alias, so you can create a new name for something else and call it by its newer name. So, okay. So right now, so the previous example, the code and the HTML were both on the same file, like in the same file. And instead of doing that, we can actually put it in two different files. And the second file is called a code behind file. And so here, again, as I just mentioned, instead of defining it in a script block, like I just had earlier, you can define it in a different file. Why you want to do it is because it's cleaner. So just like you probably moved your JavaScript code out from your problem set 8 index page and put it into a separate file, for example, called functions.js or something of that nature, you can do the same thing here. And this file is sort of behind the original file. So any code that's in this behind file is basically just on the page that you're giving it to. So for example, the code behind file for default.aspx is default.aspx.cs. And this CS means it's C#. So that's sort of where that comes from. So here's your first code behind file. What you'll see is up here, this looks relatively similar up here. The difference being there's no more script, as we had before, to define a function. So there's a function here, but I don't define it on this page, right? The slight difference up here in the page directive is this part right here, right? So here I'm saying that the code of this file is in codebehind.aspx.cs, right? Because that's defined like code behind somehow. And it inherits code behind. It just says it inherits from that thing. So, and then to run it, same way as before, just call the function, and that'll work. Now, if you look at the code behind file, it looks something like this down here. And actually, Instead of showing it here, let's show it here. So this is the ASPX page that I just showed earlier. And the code behind file is underneath, sort of like that. And it looks like this. Okay, so there's a couple. Using is the same as import or require once. That's just their syntax. And there's two functions here. So this is the code behind file. And what you notice is it's a partial class that inherits from code behind. I'm not going to go into all the object-oriented kind of inheritance nature, things like that. But this is the basic syntax. And if you use Visual Studios, this will automatically get generated. So this file just gets automatically generated. The only thing I added to this file that wasn't generated by the Visual Studios was this function right here and response.write. So all this other stuff gets generated for you, so you don't really have to worry about it at this point in time. But so here's my first code behind function. Like I said, this just prints that out. And here's a page load function. So this is when I mentioned how ASP.NET is event-driven. So certain events happen. And one of the events is the page load event. So when your page first loads on your browser, something can happen. And that's what calls this function right here, the page load function. So if we were to run this, code behind. What you'll see is that this got run when the page got loaded. And here's my first code behind function. So what that says is that All right. This got loaded at the very beginning, and then this ran afterwards, even though I never called this function explicitly from the code behind file here. Like, I never actually told it to run that. It just gets run. Okay? Does that make sense? So the this page load function right here. Right? I never said run this function. It just gets run when the page is loaded. So this automatically gets run. Okay? So there's a couple events like that you can actually get in and have it do things when certain things happen. So that's the event driven nature of ASP.NET. So does that make sense? Okay, so like I said, this is an event handler, right? So event happens, and this handles that event. And the event it handles is the page load event. So the thing is, page load gets called every single time the page is loaded. But that's not something you want, for example. Let's say you submit something on a form. When you submit something on that form, let's say you have this, the first thing that does the page does is it loads this massive piece of data from an SQL database. And let's say it takes 10 seconds to do that. Right? But you only need to do it once. So the thing is, page load gets run every single time. So if you were to put some code in there that loads something that takes 10 seconds every single time this page is refreshed, right, that would be a bit of a problem. So what you can use this isPostback property of the page. So that's this part right here. Right here. So page dot is postback. So if you hit submit on a form, that's technically a postback to the current page, right? Because you're saying, here's my form. Go back to the same page with the same with some information. I've already been on this page, so you don't need to load the information again. So to show that as an example, we can just do. So the first time this page gets loaded, right, it's not a postback because this is the first time. But then if I have a form, so this, and I submit it, right, it's a postback. So I'm going back to the same page. I've posted back to the page. So if I keep clicking this, it'll keep saying yes, 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 because I've already been on this page again. Does that make sense? So if you have some large initialization that you want to do only once on the page, you want to make sure you only do it if it's not a postback. Okay. So as it says here, this will display no the first time the page is loaded, and yes every time after. Exactly what this ASP label and all that is, I'll get to that in a bit. I just had to use that to show that as an example. Okay, so this is where ASP.NET really shines, is this idea of controls. It lets you really differentiate between your HTML code and the actual coding code that you actually want to do, so the actual real code that you want to write, for the real logic behind your website. So there's three different types of controls: the HTML server controls, web server controls, and validation server controls. So we'll go into HTML server controls. And why you want controls is because spaghetti coding is ugly. So that's the general reason, and it makes things a lot easier to code. So ASP.NET is much more programmer friendly. So if you're a good programmer and aren't that great at website stuff, ASP.NET will make that very easy for you. So HTML server controls are HTML tags. They're just regular old HTML tags, just like the head that you mentioned earlier, or, for example, a link in AHREF, any of those sort of things. It's an HTML tag that's understood by the server. And to be a server control, HTML server control, it must have the run at server tag attribute. So here's an example. I'm actually doing two things here. So basically, let's zoom in again. Control 1. Up here, you'll see. Oops. 1, 2. So here you'll see. Whoa, this doesn't work very well. Whoa, stop. Stop. Okay, we'll not use that at this point. So regular link, right? A.href. Except I never define the link itself. I never say where to point to. I never say what value to give this, right? It's just a blank link. And I give it an ID. Right? This is the same sort of thing you did in problem set 8, where you gave an ID to your probably div that contained the map, so you could pass it to the Google API. So you just give it an ID, right? And you say, I'm going to run this at the server. So that's an HTML server control. And up here is something kind of nifty. It's this comment that looks like an HTML comment. Right? An HTML comment is open bracket exclamation point dash dash. This is open bracket percent dash dash. So it looks like an HTML comment, but it actually only gets run on the server. So like when you run this code, you won't see this comment on the HTML that's generated when it gets sent back to the user. So it's just kind of a neat way to write comments to yourself without having to send back lots of comments over the wire. And then down here, what I do here, so this is the page load event, right? So this is the function that responds to the page load. And when the page is loaded, what I say is, look, give me my first HTML control, which is this link here, and I can refer to it just by its name. So I gave it the name my first HTML control, right, the ID. Now I have a variable called my first HTML control, and I can just use it like that. And I'm going to set the href property, right, which is same as a href equals something. I'm just going to set that to somepage.com. And as you can see here, there's no text associated with this. So there's a link, but it doesn't say the name for that link. But here I'm saying the inner text, so the text of that, is going to be a link. So if you look at the HTML, or the ASP side, ASP.NET side, right, there's no link and no name. But here on the page load, I'm saying I'm going to give you this link and I'm going to give you this name, or this text. So if we were to run this, as you might expect, right, a link. So it shows up as you'd expect it. So this is sort of where the HTML controls are nice, because you can change things on the fly. And one thing that's really nice about Visual Studios, so I have this, right, so I created this, right, this control here with an ID, my first HTML function, HTML control. If I look at the code behind, right, and I want to use that, it'll automatically complete it for me. And there it is, my first HTML control, enter, hit period. Here are all the things with it, so I can do all the things. So this will make, this is why coding is so nice in Visual Studios, because it literally, you can go through and say, you know, do this and change the inner text to, you know, oops, to whatever you want it to do, equals foo. So this just, the autocomplete function in the IntelliSense is what it's called, is very good in Visual Studios. Okay, whoops. Does that make sense? So this is kind of a bit of a contrived example. But here's a kind of a bit more useful one. For example, let's say you have a login page like you had for PSET 7 with your CS50 finance. So let's say you wanted to have your, you know, username. Here you can just have a span with an ID username. So you're saying, here there's going to be a bit of code or whatever which can have the username in it. And so I create a called username. Then I have a main menu, right? So each, you had to have links for your on your portfolio page to different parts to buy, sell, and so forth. But I'm not telling you what those links are, right? But then in the code behind, so when the page is loaded, I said the usernames, the text that goes in here when this gets run is going to be CS50 students, right? And then the main menu, so there's nothing in this list, but I'm going to add these two things to the list. So again, here's nothing on the ASP page, but then on the back end, in the code behind file, where I do all the coding, I can just add things to it. So if you were to run this, you'd get welcome CS50 students and a list with two things that are links like that. Does that make sense? Again, still slightly contrived. So let's go on to a bit more useful one. So one of the things you had to do in the portfolio on your CS50, the CS50 finance example, was write out the portfolio. So you had to create a table, and in that table you had to write down the stock name, the price, and how much you bought it for, anything of that nature. And the way you did that is you probably created a while loop, and or a for loop or something of that nature, and inside that for loop had the table that was created using HTML. And that was called spaghetti coding. But here, I do everything programmatically, right? So on my ASP X page, I literally just say there's going to be a table that has an ID portfolio, but I do nothing with it, right? And in the back end, I say, take my table, add a row to it, you know, with some data, and then that's it. All right, so it's all done kind of as you would program, and this is much easier to read because you can say, hey, look, I'm creating an HTML cell with that, which is called stock name, and the text inside that cell, which is one TD element, is going to be the stock name. The stock price, the text, is going to be $10. Obviously, in your PROBABLESTAT 7, you would have actually put in the stock name and the price from the database, but here, just as an example, I'm just putting this straight in. You create a row, and then you add these two cells to the row. And then you add that row to the portfolio. And here I'm saying every other row gets a background color of gray. So if you were to run this, it sort of gives you, I mean, formatting is not great, obviously, since, but it gives you that table. And looking at code that looks like this, at least personally, I find this to be much easier to read and understand than spaghetti-coded PHP code. So this is sort of where this becomes really great. Does that make sense? Any questions so far? Okay, so web server controls. So HTML server controls were HTML tags that the server understood if you added a run at server. Web server controls are controls that are understood just by the server. So they mean nothing in HTML sense. But you can do nifty things on the server side with them. So let's look at an example. So here we go. Web control one. Let's say you wanted to build some application that required a calendar that you want it to show a calendar and let the user go back and forth on a calendar, select dates and whatnot. That would be a big pain to do in PHP. I mean, you could download plugins and do it that way. In ASP.NET, literally, ASP, calendar, and you give it some properties, and that's pretty much it. So This is the line of code. This is how much code I wrote. So it's these five lines of code. And if we run this, web control one, there's my calendar. Then I can go through different dates, click a date. If I click a date, it says the data selected. So in five lines of code, I generated this. So none of this is understood by HTML. This is something that the server, that ASP.NET understands and does something on the server side. So here, what I'm doing is I'm creating a calendar control. I'm giving the ID my calendar. You can call it whatever you'd like. OnSelectionChanged, call this function. So this means when you click one of the dates, which is when a selection is changed, call this function. This is a callback function, similar to what you had to do with JavaScript in problem set 8. So, and then again, run at server. So this my calendar selection changed is this function right here. My calendar selection changed. And then what this does is it just says, put this text on this label. And this ASP label is another server control. It doesn't mean anything HTML, but it's basically a little object where you can add text to it. And so what I'm saying is that here's a label, so it's a piece of text somewhere on the page, that I'm going to, it's called my calendar date. And so in my callback from the calendar, add the text you selected the date. Does that make sense? Any questions of how this works? So I could have called this some other name as long as, and then change this as well. So, I mean, just to show you that there's nothing else going on. Map control. Oops. Oops, that's a bit more. So there's the calendar, right? Same as what you just had there. And then the code behind is this. So there's nothing in the page load, just this one function right here that I changed. So, and obviously, if you want a real thing, if you select a date, you'd probably want to say, put it on a new page or something and say, you know, what do you want to do on this day? Register an event or anything of that nature. Okay, so this is neat, but probably not something you're going to use right off the bat. So this is one that you probably will. It's called a repeater control. And as the name implies, it lets you repeat things. And the way you set it up, is this zoomed in enough?
But it's okay.
There we go. Is that good?
Yeah.
So here's a repeater. And what I do, so just as before, do ASP colon repeater. I'm saying here's a repeater control. I give it an ID and I tell it to be run at the server. So this part's pretty much the same as anything before. But now I give it something, I give it a header template, an item template, and a footer template. So what is that? Well, this lets you, it's a repeater, so you get to repeatedly do things, but it lets you do things differently for a header and a footer. There's also something for an alternate item. So for example, if you want to change the colors of lines, just like I did on the previous example, on the stock example, you can do that. But so I'm saying the header, which only gets, which gets executed the first time in the loop, make a header that says stock name and stock price. The last thing it does is it creates the footer, which just closes the table. And then the item, so every time there's an item, it does this. And what it does here is it creates a row and gets some data and the stock price part of the data. And it just prints them out there. So one thing you'll notice is that this here is a bracket percent and a dollar pound sign. So this means this pound sign is to evaluate data. So this, I'll get to this in just a second, next slide, but what this does is it says, give me some data that's bound to this object. So in order for this repeater to display something, you have to give it some data to repeat over. And that's the data that's going to be repeat over is the data that's bound, so-called bound to this object. So if we go to the next slide, here it is. So Oops, keep doing this. Let's look at this page load first. So the page load again, the first thing I do is I make sure it's not a post back, because you only want to do this the first time, right? If you post back, you don't want to get this data again. So the portfolio was the name of that repeater. That was the ID I gave it. And then I say the data source, so the data it gets, so the data that this repeater is going to repeat over and loop over is going to be get stock data. Okay, so whatever comes back from get stock data is the data I want to put in this repeater. Okay, and then the next thing I do is I do portfolio.bind data. What this says is that I gave you some data, now actually commit that data, actually bind yourself to that data, actually use that data. If you don't use this step, if you forget this last step here, this will display nothing. Because it just says, you gave me data, but you never told me to actually use it. So this actually makes you use it. Now, this is a bit contrived, but the way you'd really do this is actually get this from a database or a thing, the way you did it on problem set 7. But here, I just sort of made this up on the way. But I create something called a data table. And if you were to do this, do a MySQL query or any sort of a query from a database, you would automatically get back a data table, or you can get a data table back. So this would be literally get the data from the MySQL query and then return it and bind it to this repeater. So I'm just creating a data table for example's sake. And so the table I create has two columns. The columns are stock name and stock price. So this is sort of, if you imagine your SQL table, it's exactly the same thing. It has two columns, stock name, stock price. I also tell it, you know, the types, so type string for both of them. And I give it a primary key, just like you did with your MySQL table. And then I just add some data. So add new rows, right? Stock Google at $200, A at $1, AF at $10, and CS50 at a million. So if you now look at, so if we actually run this, there we go. So I never said to write this, right? I never said loop over each Google AAF and a CS50. What I said was, right, pretty much give me the row stock name. So this item template will loop over every single row in that data table. So it'll just do this for every row, right? And then for each row that it is currently looking, for the row it's currently looking at, give me the stock name column, and give me the stock price column. So first print out the stock name, then print out stock price. Does that make sense? So if we wanted to, for example, now, one thing you may want to do, for example, is, so this is nice, but now let's, we can just then, oops, let's do this. Alternate item template, oops. Do this, and here we can do, for example, style equals background percent. I think that's correct. So here, what I did is I created an alternate item template. So if we zoom in. So now there's, before we just had an item template, now I created an alternating item template. So, for example, if you wanted to change the color of the background in your PHP page, or even before when we were using just the HTML control, we had to, for example, use a counter that says, you know, if the counter is even, do this, like, you know, make it gray. If it's not even, make it background white. Here you can just say, well, the default item is this, and then the alternating one is this. So it automatically keeps track of even, odd, or whatever you want to do. So now if we were to run this again, except I have to, oops, let's close this. Hopefully, no, I didn't. Nope, there were build errors. I don't know what I did. In any case, that's what it should do. But I think I just messed up some of the syntax, but, so, instead of, oh, that's here. from way back when. Here we go. There we go. So now every other one is gray, just like you'd expect. Okay? Do you have any questions on that? Okay. Now, that's all fun and all, but I don't want to use the ones that are in there. Let's say, for example, I have a header that you always want to display, right? I always have an image on the top of a page and a menu that always gets displayed, right? How could I make a control out of that? How could I make it so that all I have to do is say, you know, something like ASP colon my header, and it displays a header? How could you do that? So one way you can do that is making a custom control. So you can make controls on the fly. You can make your own, right? You're not just bound by the ones that Microsoft gives you, even though there are a ton. So for example, if I just do ASP, anything, all these here that have that I'm going through right here, these are all different controls that are predefined. So for example, here's a login. If you want to create a login system, they have a predefined login control that'll let you do that. All these things are there that are predefined, that are so make it easy for you to code. So, but let's say that wasn't enough for you. Then you can create your own. And the way you do that, that was not what I wanted to do. So let's first look at the web control 3. So this is just the ASPX set page that we have. So here we want to have a custom control, right? And the custom control here, I just called it a header. So the first thing you do is, well, we have to register our custom controls. So this is how I mentioned earlier, there's these directives. And here's the register directive. So I'm saying, register this control, and I'm going to give it a tag prefix of my custom controls. So here we have, so before, for example, we had the calendar or the repeater, it was ASP colon, then calendar or repeater. Now we have my custom controls. So that's because I told it that the tag prefix is my custom controls. Let's say if you're in a company and your company always makes these controls and your company's name is CS50. And you can make this tag prefix CS50, and all your custom controls will be CS50 colon whatever the name of the control you made. Okay? And then the name of the control I made, right? So I'm going to make a control called my custom web control. So let's say you made a new header control or something. You could call this my header control or my stock portfolio control, anything you want. And so then the way you use it is the tag prefix and then followed by the name. And then you also have to obviously say where the code is. So just because you say, I'm going to make a control, I'm going to register it, ASP isn't smart enough to know that where your code is. So you have to tell it where the code is. So that's that. Okay. So what does this look like? So here's my custom control. Start at the top. So first thing, custom controls, the file ending is ASCX for control. Okay? And then, remember how before it was ampersand page at the top? Here it's ampersand control. So that's saying, here's a new control. Again, the language is C#. So that's what we're using. My code file, so that's the one, the code behind file, again, is same sort of thing, except now it's ASCX.cs. So instead of PX, it's ASCX. And again, this inherits from that. So, now, what does this control do? Well, this control, what it does is it creates a header, it creates a div with ID page header, so basically plain old HTML. And then inside this div, I'm going to create a label and a bulleted list. So again, a label is a ASP control. Bulleted list is also an ASP control. I'm just going to create that. And then I'm going to add these list items. So these are, for example, LI. We need an HTML. I'm just adding these list items. So that's pretty much that. And then just to show that you can combine code behind and these sort of things, we define them right here. In my page load, right, I add the navigation, I add another item. So if you go up here, the ID of this bulleted list was navigation. So I added lists here, added items to the list here, so home and about. And here I add another one called contact. So you can add them, mix and match how you use it, whatever you want. So that's that. So now if we actually were to use this, what do I call this? Web control 3. There you go. So here's my header, which has this header information and this list of links. So now if I had, let's say, 10 different pages, and so, for example, for your portfolio, let's say you had your buy page, your sell page, your quote page, and all of them had to display the same information, all you have to do is basically include this register directive, and then say, create this control, this one line, and then it'll display that thing on every single page. So it's a way to wrap up functionality very quickly. Does that make sense? Any questions so far?
If you want to take a break,
do you want to take, do you guys want to take a break or do you want to continue?
Whatever you want.
I'm fine either way. Would you like to take a break?
We have about 10 more minutes and then we'll have to change things.
Okay. So we'll do 10 minutes and then... did that. Okay. So the final of the final of the control types are validation and server controls. And as the name sort of implies, these let you validate input. So these are, again, tags understood by the server, which lets you validate user input. So for example, when you had your register user page for your portfolio, for your problem set 7, and you had to make sure that the password 1 was equal to password 2, or the same passwords, you can do this with a validation control. So here's a simple example. What I'm doing is I'm using something called a range validator. Oops, let me zoom in again. So here's a range validator. And as the name implies, it lets you validate a range. So for example, when you wanted to buy stocks on your portfolio page, you had to make sure it was greater than 0, right? You couldn't buy negative stocks. So this is some sort of example, but you can say, the minimum value of the input has to be 1, and it has to be less than 1,000 as well. So for obviously for buying and selling stocks, you'd set this maximum value to be higher, or set it to be dependent on how much money the user has, kind of thing. The type, that is, the input must be an integer. So for example, if they type in 2.5, it's not going to work. It's going to say, sorry, it's not going to work. And so that's my range validator. And then the thing it validates, you tell it what to validate. So my control to validate is my text box. So that's just a text box. It's called my text box. Does that make sense? So if we were to run this, control 1, what did I do? Pardon me while I figure out what's going on. Interesting. I guess this is control 2, that's that one. Sorry, mixed them up. So here's the number. So let's say you want to input negative 1. Sorry, you can't do it. Right? 1.2. Sorry, you can't do it. 1? Sure, fine. So, as you might expect, it just works simply. And the beauty of this is that if it can run on the client side, so if it can run using JavaScript, it'll automatically use JavaScript. So in this case, all this validation was run on the client side using JavaScript, meaning it didn't have to send it back to the server. The server have to look at it and then come back and say no. Right? It just said, look, here's a JavaScript function. They work, it's quick. So that's one that's one thing that's very nice. And then the second example, which I'll go to now. I'll just give that. So the second example here is a password. So it's a compare validator. As the name implies, what you want to do is you want to compare two things. So for the password example, you want to make sure that password 1 is equal to password 2. So here are my two text boxes. Make sure that password 1 is equal to password 2. So it says equal. And if you want to make, for example, you have to check that one thing's greater than the other, you change this to greater, things of that nature. Oops. And then, so for example, if I type in my password, I just did it in clear text, you can see they're not the same because I haven't typed it in yet, but now it's fine since it's, they are the same. So again, it's very little coding to actually get all this functionality, which makes this very nice to use. There are 6 different types of validators. Here they are. Required field validator, which we just saw. Compare validator. Sorry. Required fields, so obviously, as it says, you have to have a username, you have to have a password, you make one. Range validator, you know, between a range, regular expression one, and then a custom validator. So if you want to make your own validator, anything of that nature, you can do that, and it just works the same way. And these are the basic properties and methods that they have. I'm not going to go into too much details, but that's what they are. And this is the last bit. It's 2 more slides, so we're almost done. Master pages. So one thing that when you work on big websites is you want to have the page look the same, right? You want to have, always want to have, for example, a menu on the left, a header on the top, and announcements on the right. So one way you can do this is you can always basically copy, right, the HTML or the PHP code that you've written on each page as a template, and then just work in that template. But what's smarter is we say, well, how about I define a master page? How about I define a master layout, saying that this is what the layout's going to look like, and then I'll let you plug in little bits into the parts that you can change around. That's exactly what this is about. So here's a master page. The extension of a master page is .master. And again, another page directive up there. Instead of at page or at control, it's at master. But same sort of idea nonetheless. The difference here is in this part right here. So I'm putting in a ASP web control content placeholder. And this placeholder, I give it a name, web page body. So I'm not putting any data here. I'm just saying, here's my placeholder. This is the page. This is the way the page is going to look like. It's going to have a header and a footer. And you get to put some data in the middle. You can't change anything else. So all you have to do now to make every page look the same is just say, use this master page and fill in this bit of information. And that's what we do here. So this is the full ASPX page right here with the page directive up above. Oops, let me zoom in, sorry. So this is ASP, the page directive, just as before. The difference here is that I say, hey, look, use this master page right here. I'm saying, this is my master page file, right? And then I say, here's some content. So before I said, remember how I made a content placeholder? And I gave it the ID web page body? So I'm saying, here's the content that goes into the web page body. And that content, in this case, is just this data. And what it displays is this right here. My header, the body, and the footer. So if you have much more complex pages, it actually makes much more sense. But it quickly lets you just substitute bits and pieces. So that's pretty much it. Do you guys have any questions?
So if you could say, why use ASP.NET over something like Ruby on Rails?
I would say the amazing ease of development. So Ruby on Rails is great for prototyping and great for doing things quickly. The problem, I've never used Ruby on Rails, but I've done a bunch of other types of like PHP, Python, that kind of stuff. The problem with those is that to get things working, like for example a calendar or all this kind of much more higher level stuff, it takes much more work to do, or you have to download different components written by different parts. So for PHP, there's this the pair library. You can download that and use it. It works fine. But with ASP.NET, everything's just built in. You can just literally just use it right off the bat. I find it really easy to use just because I like to be able to code stuff in the back end. So the way I can just manipulate I can manipulate parts of the web page as if they were objects. I just like that, being able just to do that. And then Visual Studio makes this very easy to do. Since it has all this autocomplete features, it's just very quick to develop. I've only scratched the surface of what you can do with this, obviously. There's a lot more you can do, but it's very quick and easy to use. That's why I like it. And you can do a lot with it. So, does that sort of answer your question?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really depends on what you want. So, I mean, it depends on the application you're making. So, nothing is clearly better than the other. It's sort of preference. PHP is great because it's free. Most web servers let you run PHP scripts and PHP websites. ASPX, usually you have to pay extra for, because there's a bit more overhead. But it's really easy to develop on. A lot of internet sites for companies, a lot of them are developed using ASPX or this .NET framework because it uses C#, which means you can tie it into code that they have for actual applications they use.
Performance-wise, how does it do?
It does pretty well. So because it compiles code, because it takes your code and the first time it gets run, it compiles it, it's pretty fast. So definitely a lot faster than ASP. And I don't know about PHP, but I'm pretty sure it's either the same or faster. I've never done a comparison, but.
Do you have to run it on a Windows server?
Yes, I believe it requires IIS. There are attempts to get it to work on like OS X. I know that. I don't know how good they are. If you use Windows Server, it just works. It works on Windows XP too. So Windows XP comes with it. Windows Server obviously comes with it. Windows Vista comes with it. So literally, it just works. So you open up Visual Studio, hit the play button. Oops. This play button up here. Right, that one in the middle, you hit it, compiles it, and runs it, and there you go. So.
Where is it?
I can't. Yeah, that's right here. Right now, it's already, since the web page is open, it's actually. So, it should turn green now. So, that one in the middle. So.
The triangle.
Yeah, the triangle. So. It's really a personal preference. So. Anything else? Thanks.